It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
From atop Lane Stadium, welcome to the Shamrock, brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. Matt, you could probably watch this game on demand many times. Notre Dame 32-29 over Virginia Tech. I mean, look, I've covered a lot of Notre Dame football games. I've never covered one like that one. And I realize we just said that 2 weeks ago against Wisconsin, where we had not seen a game like that one. But like this one was just completely off the rails. Jack Cohn starts the game to little mystery, but is very ineffective. Gets benched for Tyler Buchner, who is electric. You're thinking about what the next 3.5 years might look with him as their starter. Only for him to fall off the table in the second half through two really bad interceptions. Gets injured. Are they going to put Drew Pine in? Could we see three quarterbacks again? No, it's Jack Cohn. And as to quote Drew White, he's a stone-cold killer. I mean, just phenomenal on those final two drives. Absolutely dealing. I mean, this is how ridiculous the end of the game was with Jack Cohn. His previous 40 drives had netted 44 points total. He was averaging 1.1 points per drive since the beginning of the Toledo game to when he got benched tonight. Comes in like it's absolutely nothing. Length of the field touchdown, puts him in field goal range. Jonathan Doerr hits the game winner. Your thoughts?
It's a lot to process for an intro, Pete. Hi, everyone. I'm Matt Fortuna.
Sorry.
You began this podcast the way you've begun it before. You began it the way Brian Kelly kind of began his post game, which was like, not much to say here. Pretty boring day in Blacksburg. Like, you predicted a weird score, and I don't know if it was or wasn't, because last time they played on a network that no one could watch, they won 32-29 against Toledo a couple weeks ago. So this isn't the first rodeo for Notre Dame with weird games this year. It's not the first rodeo with quarterback roulette, which I think we're just going to have to roll with it and get used to that every single week, because it's – I mean, today it worked, so you can't say it didn't work. Really weird game, really weird vibe overall. Saw a glimpse of the promising future and a reason why it's not here yet. A couple of reasons why it's not here yet.
Yeah.
I do wonder, like, am I going to refresh the transfer portal tomorrow morning and see Drew Pine's name in there? Because I don't know what the hell else that guy has to do at this point to get in the game and get more opportunities. But obviously that didn't happen tonight. It's just weird all around. I will say that, I mean, Jack Cohn's got a lot of Tommy Reese in him, and I mean that in a very, very good way. I don't know too many guys who can come in there on a moment's notice at the end of a game like that when everything's working against you and go out and deal the way he did at the end. You mentioned a couple of interesting stats. I got a couple more here. He was 7-for-9 for 93 yards on that final drive. He got yanked after three drives in the first half. Tyler Buchner in the second half was 1-of-6 for 12 yards with two interceptions. It reminded me, frankly, a lot of the Virginia Tech game 2 years ago. Notre Dame's coming off a loss. They're playing terrible offensively. Ian Book had no reason to think he should be leading this team down the field for a game-winning touchdown drive against the Hokies the way he ended up doing. And he made that play. The only thing we're missing is Ian Book's Jack Cohn's dad hasn't called one of us a douchebag yet, the way Ian Book's dad did to Tyler James of the South Bend Tribune after that game on Twitter. But maybe we'll get that later. I am a fan of Mike Cohn, though. It was a weird game. We even had Kevin Austin look like Dwight Clark on that two-point conversion. Like, that was not intended for him, I don't think. But
someone actually texted me that he looked like Dwight
Clark. It's funny because I thought Tim Hasselbeck was really good and had a lot to say, both good and bad, throughout the game. And he's analyzing that play, and he said everything short of that. He's like, it wasn't intended for him. Look at him, come on over. And I'm like, say it. Like, that looked like Dwight Clark. Just a weird, weird game. And kind of like that Wisconsin game a couple weeks ago, you look up, and it's like, well, I don't really know how they won this. I just know that in games like this, more often than not, with all due respect to Justin Fuente, his team seems to be on the losing end of a lot of these, and Brian Kelly seems to be on the winning end of all these. I don't know how you get from point A to point B there, but that's the way it usually works out with this team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to get more into Cone now or more into Buckner now, but like, it certainly, you know, Brian Kelly was asked like, hey, what do you do moving forward with the quarterbacks? And I don't know if that was where he closed his eyes and put his fists up to his forehead, or when he did like sort of the hands on the top of the head, or when he did the face and the palms. Like, he was full on exasperated. I can't believe what you watched either. I don't know what they do moving forward, but certainly like what Cone did at the end of the game, and if the offensive line found something tonight with Christophic Moore at left guard, with Joe Ald at left tackle, then maybe things are a little bit different. Like, as good as Cone was at the end, and he was great, he was untouched, unhurried, not harassed at all. And that's just not, he hasn't been able that's to live like they, that.
For, that was their plan, though. The I mean, five games. Preseason.
Yeah, that's yeah, how it was yeah, supposed yeah. to look. That he could just sit back there and deal, and he did tonight at the end because he had time to do it. To do this all without Michael Mayer, to do this in a game where you're starting a freshman left tackle, not even your first choice freshman left tackle, a freshman running back, two freshman tight ends, two freshman receivers, a freshman quarterback. I don't know how good Notre Dame is. I don't know where this team's ceiling ultimately can take it, but man, what they did tonight, they certainly will believe that they can go 11-1. I don't know if they can, but they will absolutely believe it. And you know, after tonight, they probably should.
After seeing USC and North Carolina play today, they should absolutely win those next two games. That's for sure. The schedule, and I know this is like one of those Captain Obvious hindsight's 2020 things, but like, my God, the schedule is just completely falling apart outside of Cincinnati. I mean, it's just their opponents just have not been good. And maybe Stanford and Navy are really good by the end of the year, but it hasn't looked that way for the most part for most of Notre Dame's opponents so far. I sit here feeling the way I did 2 weeks ago. Like, this is a very, very flawed team that can, and I won't say should, but definitely can go 11-1. I don't think they will. I mean, you know, they survived by the skin of their teeth tonight. I thought Braxton Burmeister, as much as we want to talk about Jack Cone's jewels, Braxton Burmeister could barely stand up back there and made play after play and gave his team everything. Hats off to that guy. He deserved better than he got from everyone around him tonight. But it was like, you gotta. Well, was Buckner? Could he have come back in? Was that addressed?
So it was not addressed. So we didn't even get clarity on what the injury was post game.
Looked like he rolled his ankle, which could suck, but also, could also just be play through the pain. You know,
when he walked off, or he couldn't walk off the field. He was like helped off the field. No weight on the no weight on the right ankle at all. But then after a couple minutes later, he's throwing on the sideline with Cone, like sort of warming up. So there was. Certainly, you would feel good about that if you're Notre Dame long haul, that there's not something that is going to prohibit him from playing 2 weeks from now in some kind of package. But again, you know, one of the developments tonight, Brian Kelly said at post game, was like, when they bench Jack Cone, give Buckner the playbook. Like, forget the package stuff, forget the wildcat talk. Like, just go out there and try to run it. And I mean, you saw him run face first into his limitations as a freshman quarterback who was, taken 45 snaps before tonight, 35 snaps before tonight. I mean, he shouldn't have a mastery of that kind of stuff. A huge learning experience for him. But that's so valuable. And look, I get it. If you're Drew Pine, you're sort of like, well, that somebody's got to be somebody. It was always going to be third, right? After the last 2 weeks, you thought Drew Pine might be number one, but I think after tonight, he's got to be three, and then you've got Cone and Buckner, and you got to figure out how you can play both.
I mean, let's go week by week the last 3 weeks, if you will. I mean, Pine comes in, and I wouldn't say saves the day. They're going to win that game with or without him, but you know, he's the quarterback at the end who helps Brian Kelly beat Wisconsin and get the Notre Dame wins record. And afterward, Kelly's like, Cone's our starter, Cone's our starter. And he gets one more question about it. And Kelly makes a joke to the effect of like, of course, you're never going to stop asking about the quarterbacks. That sticks to me like gum to my shoe or something to that effect. Can't avoid it. Last week, we know who our quarterback is. We're going with one guy. We got to stick with it. We can't do flavor of the week. And then today, it's complete opposite. Like, I mean, I'm not breaking any news here. Like, whatever the hell he says in front of a microphone or camera, like, discard it. It doesn't mean anything. He does it because he has to. I wrote 105 fun facts about him 2 weeks ago. I could write 105 lies he told in the last 2 weeks alone if I really want to dig into it. It's kind of comedy hour. But, you know, at halftime, the comment that was interesting to me that he said to Kelsey Riggs when he said, you know, Buckner is going to be there for the second half was, you know, we've been trying to hold off going to him, as in Buckner. And I just, I get it. He's young. We saw his limitations or you know, his inability to master everything as a first-year limited experience player. But even to say that out loud, I just think, like, why are you trying to hold off going to him? You know, it's not like Jack Cone was giving you a reason before the fourth quarter tonight to hold you off from going to him. Like, the best players should play. And we've heard again and again, both on and off the record, how this guy is the future of Notre Dame football. And not by any means saying this is a lost season, but everyone has mistakes they got to get out of their system. And this would be the time for Tyler Buckner to do it. Now, who the hell knows, right? Alabama just lost. Everyone except Georgia in college football in 2021, I think, has lost a game so far. And Iowa. Like, maybe there is a path to a playoff at 11. I don't know. I don't think so. Not with the schedule. But, like, it's a crazy, crazy year. They're going to have to be four teams they put in that field at the end of the year. And if you're 11-1, regardless of your competition, you've got as good of argument as anyone. So I'm not saying write things off or prepare for the future or anything like that. But if all things are being equal and one guy has more upside than the other, reason would state Tyler Buckner should be that guy if he's healthy. We'll see, though. I mean, it's only at Notre Dame, only with Brian Kelly, can you have only three scholarship quarterbacks and still find a way to, like, I wouldn't say mismanage it because you won the game tonight, but, like, make a controversy out of everything. Misdirect the public out of everything. Like, there are only so many ways you can, like, reslot 1, 2, and 3. And yet we've seen that juggling act in every fashion possible over the last 2 weeks. And I don't know where it goes from here. You know, when you're in the spotlight the way they are, you risk saying things that you corner yourself into the way Brian Kelly did this past week by saying, we've got one guy and we got to go with him and stick with him.
Hold up. At halftime last week, he said they're sticking with Jack Cone.
Yeah.
And then immediately went to Drew Pine. So, like, taking anything he says with too much gravity, I think at this point, it's kind of
I tweeted his opening statement. He's like, you guys should write about how great Cone was, but you'll find the negative. And I tweet it. And it's probably the first time in the history of journalism or college football where every single reply in my mentions, and there were like dozens upon dozens of them, were all pro-media and anti the team that just won. So, like, when you've done that, when you've got the fan base on the media side, you're really...
Yeah, Brian Kelly and Matt
you're
Brown
really wearing out.
On point tonight.
Wearing things out. But, I mean, it just... You got to, like, I don't think there's a clear-cut answer. I think if we've learned anything now that we're at the halfway point of the season, there isn't. Like, you need to keep everyone engaged. I'm not at practice, so I don't know. I assume Drew Pine is engaged. We all hear what a gamer he is. He obviously looks engaged when he gets in there on Saturdays. It would stand to reason he could be frustrated with the way things played out this week. I don't know that, but from the outside looking in, that could make sense. But you can make that argument for any three of those guys. I mean, we've seen a lot of veteran quarterbacks, both at and out of Notre Dame, not do what Jack Cone just did, and with good reason. Like, you gave up on me. Like to stay mentally engaged and do what he did tonight, like, is something that I don't think you can fully appreciate. It was really, really impressive. I also think, much like Drew Pine in the second half last week, that's not... that can't be duplicated over four quarters of a game, which goes back to our original point. Like, you still don't have a guy who can get you from the start of one game to the end of another. And I don't know, in 2012, there was Golson and Reese. There was a starter and the closer. With modern baseball analytics, openers are a big thing right now. Maybe that's what Notre Dame's going for. You got a guy do the first three drives of the game and someone come in to relieve him. I don't know. It worked tonight. I think it should work through most of their opponents that they're playing this season. But at the same time, much like they met their match last week against Cincinnati, I think eventually this catches up to them because it almost hit again tonight.
Well, okay. My mild counterpoint on this: why can't they, like, if we think they're going to go 10-2, can't they go 10-2 like this?
Yeah, 10-2. Yeah, 11-1. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe not. I think they can go 10-2 and play this way the rest of the year, which I would still consider a good season. And, like, at the beginning of the year, I must have said this 50 times, what would constitute a good year for Notre Dame? One, win 10 games. Two, you know Tyler Buchner is the real deal moving forward. This would get you there. Like, you could keep playing this way, get to 10-2, know Tyler Buchner is really good. At that point, like, this was, you know, is it a rebuilding season? Maybe a little. Reloading season, less so. But certainly, like, it's a team in transition. But, I mean, you're playing, seven freshmen on offense? Some of them look like they're going to be really, really good long haul. If you can know that by the end of the year, I mean, look, they're not going to the playoff. They're not winning a national champion this year. So, yeah, so be it. But if you can end this season in a way that you feel confident, like you have the cornerstones for the next great Notre Dame team, whether that's 22 or 23 or 24, like, I would take that as a huge win if I'm Brian Kelly. Like, that, to me, that should energize you if you follow Notre Dame football, opposed to frustrate you that they can't pick a quarterback right now.
If they could win 10 or 11 games, yeah. I think, yeah, if you come up for air at the end of the season and look back on it that way, sure. Within the season, though, like, you still have to carve a path to getting to that point, and it's not going to be easy. I'm not saying it can't be done. It's just every week this season has been a season unto itself with its own plot twists and turns and developments and, oh, my God, what are they doing moments. I mean, Tim Hasselbeck said on the broadcast today, like, I had the exact quote here. It was, let me find it. He said, I think we just saw Tyler Buchner win the job, basically, as he said at the start of the third quarter. And, hey, who's to argue with him at that point based on what you saw? Yeah. So it's like, you don't want to – you want to get these guys ready, but if you do have a guy like Jack Cohn, like, you don't want Tyler Buchner to learn how to do a two-minute drill with a game on the line when you have a guy back there who – we know can do it. We've seen him do it twice now. Three times now. Florida State, Toledo.
Tyler Buchner did a two-minute drill at the end of the first half.
That's different. You're not losing the game at the end of the first half.
Right. But, I mean, the pressure is different, but the mechanics are the same. You're trying to score a touchdown, and, you know, you can live with that without doing it. But, like, to run an offense that way and have some success is significant. But, I mean, for Cohn to do it, twice.
Three times, really?
In 3.5
minutes. Florida State, Toledo, and this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable to see what they're doing. Defensively, we should probably get into that a little bit. You know, Kurt Heinisch back tonight. They definitely had some trouble with Burmeister's mobility. Understandably so, that dude is quick. They had some breaks in the third quarter, I thought, and even at the end of the game where Burmeister overthrew, I think, Trey Turner just by a little bit. You know, Notre Dame has its own pick. They were able to convert that into some points, I believe, like that. But defensively, this was certainly not their best game, but this would be one of the times, like, I think in the first couple weeks of the season, it was – you looked at Notre Dame's defense, felt like they played poorly. That's why the offense had success. Tonight, I felt like Virginia Tech actually did some good things. I would give more credit to Vatek than I would to Florida State.
Yeah, absolutely. To be honest, I mean, I thought Virginia Tech missed a golden opportunity early in the second quarter. They had the long pass to Trey Turner down to the one, first and goal at the one. And for whatever reason, and this has never worked in the history of football as far as I've ever watched, where you try to rush a play so they can't review it. They're going to review it no matter what. And they rushed it and completely were unprepared, not ready, and wasted first and goal from the one. And they ended up kicking a field goal on that drive to make it 10-0. And I just think in a game like that where points are at a premium, and you're playing, at that point, Tyler Buchner came in. 14-0 for Tyler Buchner in that venue is a lot different than 10-0. 14-0 with a lead for that program is a lot different than 10-0. And I thought they really shot themselves in the foot there early on, Virginia Tech, that is, with a chance to establish a bigger lead. But it was I was impressed by Braxton Burmeister a lot more than I thought I would be coming into this game. And the whole – I mean, you were there. You could speak to it better than me. But you understood at the end what Brian Kelly was talking about when he talked about wanting a guy who can go into a road environment like that at night, hostile crowd. Not saying Buchner can't do it, but he had a couple really bad picks. And frankly, should have had another one in the second half that was dropped. So that's the value of a Jack Cohn. How do you manage that over the course of the season? I don't know. Hopefully Tyler Buchner's healthy, first and foremost. I would guess he is based on everything that we saw transpire. But good time for the bye week. Good time. I mean, the one benefit of being an independent, you essentially get to schedule your own bye week, and Notre Dame gets to do that at or damn near the halfway point of every season. And they did again this year as they go into it at 5-1.
Yeah, absolutely. It's they certainly have a lot to get worked out, but if Buckner's health is clear and he can play moving forward, then I feel like they'll be in a position where he can do some stuff. And like, then the Buchner you're bringing in is not the Wildcat quarterback that we saw against Toledo. It's a guy with more of a handle of the offense. So you should be able to use him in a way that you're not asking him to throw the passes that he threw tonight that got picked off, that you could bring him in just as like to spark you here or there. But it's hard. I think the thing that I can explain the least is why the offensive line was so poor at the beginning and why they were so good at the end. I mean, what changed? Because at the beginning and the end, the quarterback's the same. Still Jack Cohn. And you're not even attempting to run the ball at the end. So why that group was better, that's pretty tough to make sense of here from, you know, an hour after the game.
Yeah, it is tough to make sense of. Different game situations, obviously. But, you know, I just feel like I've heard Tom Brady say this after, I think it was after the Super Bowl comeback against the Falcons. Like, he's just like, watch any big football game ever. Like, the offense always gets its way at the end. Like, the defense is just gas. Like, you cannot compare the beginning of any football game to the end of another, because the offense is dictating tempo and they have the ball and they're going to do everything they can to score. And they have a condensed amount of time, and that's that. And there's nothing the defense can do about it. They're literally playing defense. Is that, I don't know how that explains why Jack Cohn is better protected than he is on the first drive of every game. That's all but two games now where he's taken a really big sack on the first drive of the game. And the one time he didn't, or one of the two times he didn't last week, he had a really bad pick against Cincinnati. But did they find something there? I don't know. It was another different lineup, four different starter at left tackle this season. I think this was the first time they outrushed their opponent all season long. I could be wrong there.
I would think so.
It was 173 for Notre Dame, 134 for Virginia Tech. As Notre Dame's high on the season on the ground. We saw Kyren Williams be Kyren Williams and act like Kyren Williams after the game and with us, almost a brouhaha at the end, which was entertaining to watch from afar. No Chris Tyree for most of the second half.
Turf toe. Okay,
gotcha.
Yeah, Brian Kelly, we updated turf toe, and then Mayer, he felt like Mayer wanted to play, and the staff was like, let's not. It was going to be limited to like sort of red zone situations or maybe obvious passing downs, and the staff was just like, we're not going to get you hurt even worse for like kind of a high risk, medium reward type of situation. So that was a bit of a game time.
I believe that was genuine. He was in uniform, and the broadcast crew basically said like, he might play, he might not. That was genuine. You alluded to this, I think, on Twitter. They said on the broadcast, you know, Brian Kelly said, I don't want a flavor of the week at quarterback. That's like, how in the world do you decide with the roller coaster that you've seen so far what you're going to do? And you had something a little trippier, to put it lightly.
Yeah. It's like, Welcome to my, here's my new flavor, LSD chip. I think that was, we talked about this at halftime of the press box. I wonder how much of a handle Brian Kelly has on the quarterback situation.
You mean versus Tommy Rees or like in general?
No. I just mean in terms of like knowing what's coming. Because I didn't, he benched Jack Cohn and then got such a huge spark from Buckner as you're watching it. And again, this is a halftime before Buckner slid down in the second half. But I just wonder if Brian Kelly knew Tyler Buckner was going to give him that. Do you start him here? If you knew Jack Cohn could give you the fourth quarter at the end, like why can't he give you that in the second or the third quarter? And then like even the Drew Pine stuff, he comes in last week as a little bit of a spark, leveled off at the end. But it just, I just wonder, as much as Brian Kelly talks about how much fun he's having coaching this team, the fact that he, like head in hands, face palm, arms overhead, like post game, this, it's fun but also exhausting. And I wonder how much he knows like what he's going to get week to week, other than the attitude and the physicality. Like certainly there was nothing that I think happened tonight that he was like, yep, I saw that coming from the offensive line, or yep, I totally thought Jack Cohn was going to do that at the end, or you know, I guess defensively is maybe what you got. But even like Cam Hart has been a star the last couple weeks, struggled tonight. You know, big missed tackle in the open field that turned into points for Virginia Tech eventually. So I just wonder if Notre Dame is just going to keep living this way where they don't, it's hard to know what you're going to get on a week-to-week basis other than the fact that you know you have a bunch of really good players, which is, hey, that's a great start.
The coaching staff worked 77 hours last week. I'd love to hear the workload this week they put in. It's a great situation that Harry Hiestand was in town all those years ago, right? Like just great to have a guy in town to go behind the full-time staff's back. Great situation all around. But I do – like you only have three quarterbacks. Like, again, there's only so much – like, we're not at the halfway point of the season, and all these guys have played – after tonight, when Tyler Buckner played most of the middle of the game, like, all these guys have shown a significant amount of game film against opposing defenses. You only have three. Like, there's only – the element of surprise I don't think will continue to work the way it has so far this season.
It's working on Brian Kelly. I think Brian Kelly is surprised of this.
I think so, too. But, like, the element of surprise – and, like, by surprise, I maybe that's a bad word – like, the element of momentum. Like, I don't – like, Notre Dame fan base wanted to crown Drew Pine last week, and I get it. There's a reason the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy on the team. Not saying he didn't play well last week, but I don't think there's any pressure in the world entering a game down 17-0. You have nothing to lose. Like, that has got to be the easiest situation in the world to be coming into a game for the first time. Like, no one's going to criticize you for anything you do because you didn't get them in that hole. And if you do anything competent, you're going to be a hero. And, you know, not quite the same situation today with Tyler Buckner. And he didn't play quite as well, nearly as well, I would say, as Drew Pine did last week. But, again, low-pressure situation, I think, for a true freshman.
I disagree with that. I mean, it's on the road. The environment was going against you. Like, I agree. It's a low-pressure situation in the sense of, like, on message boards, no problem. While you're living it, high-pressure situation.
It is, but they're down 10-0. Like,
right.
If they lose, it's not his fault. If they win, he's a hero. Like, obviously, obviously you got to play football. Like, that's hard. I'm not, like, discounting that. But, like,
right.
The mental state. Again, there's a reason Tyler Buckner did not start this game at Lane Stadium at night. It is a different situation coming in the middle of a game. And now, like, defense coordinators have film on him for more than just like the five plays a game. He comes in to run a very predictable run play.
Yeah.
So to stretch this out essentially twice as much as you have already, since you're halfway through the season, I don't know. You know, I think we were all of the belief after last week, pick one guy and stick with him. Now let's throw Drew Pine in there against USC. I don't know. Like let's, what other combinations can we come up with?
Yeah, just wait till Brendan Clark starts against North Carolina. One of the reasons I felt this team would be highly entertaining to watch, I did not think it would be as this entertaining. But if you're just sort of following the team, certainly if you're writing about them as a journalist, they're a fun team to cover because you don't know what's going to happen before the game starts. You don't know what's going to happen in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter sometimes. To have the Florida State game win in overtime, blow a lead, win in overtime. Toledo, you're almost losing at home to a MAC school. You have a dislocated finger on your starting quarterback.
This was more impressive than that, by the way. I meant to tweet that.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, that was impressive. This was just like he came out and was Tom Brady all of a sudden after was Andy Dalton for the first three drives. Like, it was that was an incredible turnaround. Even the Cincinnati game was dramatic and entertaining. You know, if you're a Notre Dame fan, not the kind of entertainment that you're looking for, but this is why college sports kicks ass. Like, college football in particular, you just don't know what's going to happen. That's when it's really good.
That may be when it's really bad
for coaches, but for reporters, for people who just follow the sport or love the sport, this is awesome. Like, it doesn't get much better.
No, bring on the chaos. I mean, I think it was the opposite of that for the last couple of years, which is why they're probably going to expand the playoff. It was very predictable season. Now, every single playoff team from last year has already lost a game. Everyone good has lost a game other than Georgia and Iowa. And maybe you throw Michigan in there. I don't. They won 32-29 tonight as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't throw them in there.
Iowa and Georgia are undefeated. Cincinnati. Like, perfect year for them to make a playoff. Maybe 11-1 Notre Dame. I don't think they're good enough. I don't think they'll get there. But, like, it's a crazy year. Why not? Like, let's throw that out there right now as a hypothetical, because, like, nothing we thought we knew about a lot of these teams coming into the year has held to be true. And that's what's made it fun. That's what's made it exciting. We identify Notre Dame for a long time as a team that wins the games it's supposed to win and doesn't always win the games it's not supposed to win. And in some ways, that's still true. I mean, the only game they lost was Cincinnati, an underdog, and with Alabama's loss tonight.
Hey, look, they have the nation's longest winning streak against unranked competition now.
After
take that, Nick Saban.
And Dabo, a couple weeks ago, lost to NC State. They were one ahead of Notre Dame there as well. It's been a wild ride. I mean, I think we're all ready for a bye. Kyron Williams was like, no football whatsoever. Can't wait.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame's SID was like, oh. Also, like, when he was talking about, he got rocked.
Oh yeah, he talked about, I'm going in.
Field, he got ejected, and he came back and he was like, "Yeah, I was getting checked out for concussion, doing the one hop, and then we scored, and I told Dr. Leza, like, I gotta get back out there. No more time for tests. Like, and he's back in the game.
What? It's not like they don't want to play. Like,
yeah. No, I love the authenticity of the whole thing. Like, Brian Kelly included in terms of his mannerisms about just how, like, forget the quotes, just if you just watched him.
No, it reminded me of the Florida State game.
The game a second time.
Like, post-game. Yeah. Like, he's very, like, he's obviously got an edge to him. He's obviously chippy, but, like, there's definitely a part of him that's kind of like, shoot, man, I thought I saw it all my 30-something years as a head coach. And this game and this program never ceases to surprise me. Like, I'm going to grit my teeth and try to enjoy this so long as we keep winning more than we lose. And so far, they've done that. So it should be an interesting second half of the season, no question about it. I think that's all I got. I mean, we've got a lot. I don't know. What's our bye week plans? Are we going to do a midseason?
There are no bye week plans. Much like Kyron Williams, perhaps we will have nothing to do.
Actually,
I find that highly unlikely.
We got to get your groupie on the show again, Mike Tirico, who is either the biggest Drew White fan in the world, or the biggest Pete Sampson fan in the world, or both.
Yeah, no, maybe both. I mean, both Drew White and I are very wholesome people, so we're rootable types. I appreciate that. Shout out from Tirico. That was really
all nice. Off you saying what, Drew White was underrated?
But immediately, my next tweet, I misidentified who caught the touchdown pass, so I felt like a total fraud like two seconds later.
Twitter. No one cares.
I thought it was Tyree and Kyron Williams, so... Yeah, no, I mean, this was an incredible game. Great spectacle here. The crowd was way better than what I remember in 2018 because the game was way better. The entrance was great. And look, I mean, Notre Dame now, they're off. They're two toughest games, I think. I mean, I don't know if we're counting Stanford as a tough game yet. But yeah, North Carolina and USC at home. You got Navy at home. You're at Virginia. Georgia Tech at home. At Stanford. Georgia Tech and Navy, I hate to say, like, oh, they're a sure thing because Notre Dame almost lost to Toledo. But, you know, if they – I feel like a 5-1 finish would be impressive. And I'm not sure that I would have always said that going 10-2 – like, I think 10-2 would be a good year, but not necessarily an impressive year. But North Carolina – or Stanford and Virginia, I think, are probably a little bit better than I thought. Stanford a lot better than I thought. North Carolina, USC are much worse.
Yeah, so. I got to see what this team looks like health-wise too down the stretch of the season. Navy, I always feel skittish about them as a first-year coordinator, but Freeman played them in the AAC, so I'm not worried about that. Although they almost beat SMU today and they beat UCF last week and they're playing much better. Stanford has a habit of beating top five teams. I don't think Notre Dame's going to be there by the end of the season, but they might. I mean, point remains, Stanford plays above its head sometimes for big games. And then, I mean, Carolina, who knows? Like, that's got to be the most frustrating team to watch and be a fan of. Like, 1 week they're putting up 59 points against Virginia.
The media overrated them. It's the media's fault.
That's what you get for being such a nice guy, Mac Brown, and Tom Allen in Indiana while we're at it. But, like, they... I had that USC game circled for a while. I can't in good conscience do that now after the performances they've put out at home. Or maybe they're just good away from home and not good at home. I don't know. But they got boat raced tonight by Utah at home.
Oh, I didn't pay attention. The only thing I saw from them is I think that Drake Jackson left in a walking boot.
So there's that coming out of the bye week. They have a bye week as well, USC. Georgia Tech, I don't think Notre Dame's good enough where any of us can say, oh, that's a win. We don't need to worry about that. And Georgia Tech has also been a very uneven team this season. But, again, game Notre Dame should win. And, frankly, the ones they've won, like, the only game they've lost this year is the only game I thought they should have lost. Like,
they're not going to play a ranked team the rest of the year, I don't think.
I doubt it. I don't see how that would be possible.
Now they believe are they at 36?
Yeah, 36 straight unranked.
Wins over? Over unranked. So, I mean, if those trends continue, no, I mean, I could see, maybe could Stanford creep in there? Maybe. Could Virginia? Maybe. But, I mean, USC is no. North Carolina, no. Georgia Tech, no. Navy, no. I mean, it's more likely than not that they won't play a ranked team until they get to a bowl game.
I would agree with that.
So, if you keep that streak alive, you're going 11-1. How about that, Matt Fortuna?
Said that going into the Cincinnati game with the home streak, and that kind of blew up in your face. So.
One streak will survive.
We'll see. I got to see. I mean, it's a long season. Tell me about it.
I have to drive from Blacksburg to South Bend tomorrow.
How long is that?
It is a long season.
How long
season.
Is that
drive? It's like 8 hours.
How many episodes? Are you going to listen to the whole first season of the Shamrock on repeat to get you through it?
Listen to our terrible predictions.
Actually, that would make for actually a fun podcast fodder. Like you going back and looking at how dumb
I would probably look like Brian Kelly did after the game. It's like, oh, God. And then I'd probably criticize you for being too negative.
Of course, because I'm the one who yanked Jack Cohn. But
exactly. There's a lot to unfold with Notre Dame the rest of the year. And like, from our point of view, the best thing that happened tonight is, like, everyone's still really going to want to see how it unfolds. Like, the Tyler Buchner dynamic was going to be the same whether Notre Dame won or lost. You want to see him the rest of the way, but there's skin in the game now with him, with Notre Dame at 5-1. That's whether you think they have a shot at the playoff or not. I personally do not. But, you know, to go 11-1 or 10-2 with this roster this year in college football, I think would be pretty impressive. To get to a New Year's Six game. And then ultimately that's what I want to see from Notre Dame. I want to see Notre Dame on the field with somebody else who is really good. And I couldn't tell you who that person is or who that team is because everyone's losing. But I would like to see Notre Dame in a New Year's Six game against a brand name opponent. And then you could sort of judge where the program is moving into what is going to feel like a kind of a new cycle in 2022 and 2023.
I'm not as like I don't know if the word's a message, right? But like, there's still so much with this season, still so much to play for this season that I'm not there yet as far as the future. They have the same number of losses as Ohio State and Alabama. Like, I don't think Ohio State and Alabama are looking ahead to next year yet. You know what I mean? And I know they, with
yeah, it's more just a point of view of like where the program is, right? Like, we're not spending much time this year talking about gap closing with Alabama. This is just like, get your new pieces in order, figure out who you are. If you have a new identity, figure it out. Like, they'll figure it out over the next month and a half. But then I would really like to see them figure it out in a bowl game. If there's stakes in that bowl game. I don't want to see them figure it out in the Cheez-It Bowl against Texas.
You just don't want to go to the Cheez-It. That would be fun after actually seeing Texas play today. That would be really fun. You just don't want to go to the Cheez-It Bowl again. I don't blame you. I don't know. I still think there's a lot to play for this season. I still think there's a lot at stake this season. Like, it's a weird year. Not saying Notre Dame's one of the four best teams in the country, but like, who's to say they can't be there at the end of the year if they win all their games? Like, it's year 12 of the Brian Kelly era. I'm not saying go win it all this year, but like, I don't think they should ever be in that mode of like, well, if we can use this year to build toward next year, like, we're going to be in good shape. Like, no, like everyone on that roster, even the backups, even the guys who are filling in for injured guys, were all highly talented players. And outside of the offensive linemen, they've all played that way for the most part. So I don't look at it as a transitional year, for lack of a better term.
All right. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack the rest of this year. There'll be a lot to unpack of what this year means for everything that follows it. So we'll be here to talk about that on many episodes of the Shamrock to come the rest of the season. Perhaps we'll do like sort of a mid-season temperature check of the program after I get some sleep.
I'll be in Vegas this week. What's the bet I should? Oh, what's the bet
you.
I should make?
Good for you.
My brother's getting married. What could go wrong there?
Yeah.
If you guys want to help me with my best man speech, I'm all for it. But if you want to help me make some money, give me a good prop that I could possibly find on Notre Dame. How many different quarterbacks in their three quarterback room can they start over the last six games? Four.
Good times. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up this after-hours edition of the Shamrock. Following Notre Dame's 32-29 win that I still cannot quite fully process, he's Matt Fortuna in Chicago. I'm Pete Sampson in Blacksburg. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of the Shamrock.